Alex Breitenbach.
I'm Sean Cabrera.
And this is the Big Red Hockey Cast, the official podcast of Cornell Big Red Hockey, produced by the Big Red Sports Network. As always, thanks for listening. And check out the Big Red Sports Network at Cornell BRSN. That's Cornell BRSN on Instagram to never miss out on any Big Red action.
Now, Alex, obviously, we got this weekend's recap to look forward to. But for the audience, if you want that extra taste of Big Red Hockey and Cornell sports en general, then look no further than our sister podcast, Around the Gorge. New episodes are released every Monday. That's a fresh start to your week. And I know this one is a bit of a treat since they got that televised audio clip of Berard's overtime winner. A little bit of a spoiler alert there. You know, assuming you didn't watch the game, come on. But of course, yeah. If you're taking a break from reading six syllabi, waiting online to get your food at dining halls, etc., on this first week of the spring semester, then tune into Around the Gorge. That is Around the Gorge. Now, with that, Alex, last week you said you were a Friday type guy because Friday night equals hockey night. Now, what happened this past vendredi, as the French say?
Okay, well, this Friday was sort of comme ci comme ça. Not necessarily très mal, but very comme ci comme ça, and I'll tell you why. Okay. It was certainly Friday, as most of you all know. We went Princeton Tigers came to Lina, and this was not, I don't want to say it was embarrassing, but it was an upset. This was an upset, a 5-4 defeat, a decisive win for the Tigers. And so Cornell went down early, finding themselves in a 3-0 hole halfway through the game. And then, honestly, they began one of the best comebacks I've ever seen in the second half of the second period with a goal from Kyle Penny, assisted by Sam Malinsky and who else but Hank Kempf at 13:33. And their next goal didn't come until 3 minutes to go in the third. So just 3 minutes left in the game from Jack Malone, again assisted by Sam Malinsky and Hank Kempf, making the game 3-2. Now, Princeton then scored at 18:05, and that forced Cornell to pull their goalie at 4-2 down. And so this is honestly the best sequence of back-and-forth hockey I've seen in a while. And it really just goes to show that hockey is a game as much about strategy, but it's also about time. Because in this case, Cornell got a goal from Travis Mitchell at 19:10, assisted by Ben Berard and Tim Rigo. But that was quickly followed by a Princeton empty netter. Yeah. And then as if, you know, and this was literally with 5 seconds left in the game. Ben Berard scores on the power play at 19:50, assisted by Malinsky and Betts. But ultimately, that's not enough. And I remember thinking, you know, watching that game, I'm like, oh, man, there's still time on the clock. We still have enough time. Unfortunately, Princeton ended up winning the draw, and we were able to get it into their zone, but they just kind of pinned it to the boards and played clock management. And, you know, with 5 seconds left on the clock, what are you going to do? I wouldn't put it past them. We probably could have tied it. Or actually, no, we had a very good opportunity. Steinberg had a wide open cage, and I don't fault him for this because he didn't exactly get the shot off quite well, but he just sort of fanned at the end. He had a perfect like opportunity there, and he just sort of fanned on it, and that would have tied the game. But, you know, in the end, time is a factor in this game, and we came up short 5-4 at Lina Rink. It is our first official defeat in over 2 years, as far as I'm aware. Now, I'll have to check that later on for sure. But I as far as I'm aware, you know, it was not enough. And that was certainly heartbreaking. So let's get into a little bit more of the stats. Cornell power play, 1 of 3 with 4 shots. So the power play came in the final 10 seconds of the game. So the power play is not lost on us. That was a great redemption for them. Penalty kill, of course, always spectacular. 2 of 2 with only 3 shots against. We played a very physical game in terms of faceoff, 42-23 in favor of Cornell. The same with shots on goal, 27-23 in favor of Cornell. In the goaltending department, Ian Shane got the nod for that night. He had 18 saves on 22 shots for an 8.18 save percentage. and it was his first loss of the season. So obviously not the night he wanted, but still, you know, he kept this in there. I think he did a good job keeping his head in the game. You know, we got down early 3-0. I think he stood on his head afterwards. We really did light a fire under, you know, what can't be said on air, but ultimately it wasn't enough because we ran out of time. On the other side of the ice, Princeton goalie Jeremy Forget had 23 saves on 27 shots. So a pretty spectacular performance from a goalie who had really been struggling. Forget had not had a win in like his last seven starts. So this was definitely a good night for him. Some notable takeaways from the game. Like I said, in the end, Cornell came up short in a back and forth game against the last place Princeton Tigers, who, not surprisingly, have moved up a singular place in the ECAC standings, and now Dartmouth is last place because they beat us. And for the first time since the ASU weekend, Cornell's defense and goaltending looked a little bit porous, and that was allowing our chosen Princeton player to watch, like we said last week, Corey Andonofsky. We said he was going to be a potential player to watch in the game. Corey Andonofsky had 3 assists, so a 3-point night for Corey Andonofsky, not what we wanted here. But Cornell's penalty kill continues to dominate, and it was not a great lead up to a marquee matchup with the number one team in the country. Now, Sean, I will let you get into Saturday night, because Saturday night was an unbelievable game.
Well, Saturday night was pretty much a party night. You know, like you said, you would figure from a 5-4 defeat to Princeton that Cornell and Quinnipiac, it was going to be unfortunately.
I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared. I'm like, yeah, this is not what we want. What initially I thought, like, oh, because we look at what we're up against. Like, you know, because initially, remember we had said, you know, we can't sleep on these teams, correct, right? Can't sleep on Princeton. And I think we kind of fell asleep in the beginning, although we did wake up at the end. Credit where it's due. However, I didn't think going into this game that we're going to be like, oh man, this may be a sweep this weekend. I was a little bit pessimistic. But Sean, what happened?
That's fair. I mean, I would have compared Princeton to like piranhas pretty much, and
Quinnipiac
to massive sharks.
Oh, the megalodon.
Megalodon. But with that being said, we pulled out of the hat somehow a 2-1 overtime victory against Quinnipiac. And both those Cornell goals, by the way, were scored by my breakout star, well, my predicted breakout star of the season, Ben Berard, assisted by Sam Malinsky and Jack Malone, respectively. You know, I mean, and this was really the game that we all hoped for. I mean, what is Cornell's strongest asset, arguably? The defense, in most cases. Yeah. The Princeton game didn't show that for some reason. It happens to the best, and off night it happens. But it was a tight defensive battle between two very skilled teams with top defenses in the NCAA. And I mean, Cornell took the lead on a power play goal, again, from Ben Berard at 5:51 of the second period. Suddenly, there was a counterattack, and the tying goal by Quinnipiac came at 5:39 of the third period. And I remember at that time, I was like, well, we fought, we tried, it happens. But suddenly, in overtime, Cornell capitalized again with a goal from Ben Berard with 16 seconds remaining in the game. 16 seconds.
And bar down. Literally bar down.
Exactly. You could hear the ding.
You could hear it. You could hear the ding.
Hear the ding on that. What's it on the replay of ESPN Plus? You could hear the ding. And it was such a satisfying sound. Something about it felt so satisfying. It was a delicious goal. Let me just put it at that.
Oh yeah.
Scrumptious. A French chef kiss on the hand, basically.
Yeah, certainly. That's how I describe it.
And with that, I mean, let's look at the power play. Cornell's power play was 2-for-3. Alex, I know you like those numbers. I mean, with four shots on goal.
I'm loving those numbers, man. You know, I like these numbers. And I remember we had said, you know, our solution going forward, put Ben Berard on the power play, please.
Yes.
He scored twice on the power play. Good Lord. No, that was great. What a great performance. And what a redemption, not only against the number one team in the country,
correct,
as ranked by Everything College Hockey and the polls online, but also, it's just great.
And then we just switched that on over to the penalty kill. Cornell was 4-for-4 with 7 shots against them. I mean, Cornell, they looked rock solid. They looked rock solid for that whole game. For a majority of the game, nothing was passing through. I mean, of course, until that third period, but come on. Cornell put up a massive great fight, or massively great fight, rather. And of course, yeah, in faceoffs, it was really, really tight knit. It just goes to show how almost even it was in terms of faceoffs. It was 27-26 in favor of the Bobcats. And in terms of shots on goal, it was 34-20 in favor of Quinnipiac, showing.
Now, hold on there. There's something to unpack here, because the first period of that game, I'll be honest, I thought we were going to lose that game in the first period. We were not playing well in the first period. There is something to be said about the physicality of Quinnipiac in that first period, because it was largely in our defensive end. Correct. And our defense had to put on a literal show to keep these guys from scoring in that first. It was crazy. We got outshot. I don't even remember the numbers, but it was insane. We only had like 9 shots the first period, and they had like some 15 or 18.
They were in the double digits already.
It was crazy.
Even before the first, I was going to say when the whistle for the first period was really blown, but, you know, they already were registering double digits of shots again.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
With mere minutes to spare, too.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned the defense had to, you know, they had to stand on their heads, but more particularly, Ian Shane, he went from having a semi-rough night in the office against Princeton, you know, it was an off night, to having arguably, you know, the game of his career at the moment. 33 saves on 34 shots. And those aren't just any ordinary shots. Those are 34 shots from the number one ranked Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
And that equals out to a 971 save percentage.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, let's not forget, you have Ty Smolanic.
Yeah.
See, I told you I was going to mess that up in the beginning. Anyways, Ty Smolanic, Ethan DeJong, Zach Metza, and Skylar Brindamore, Brindamore's son. And this man shuts it down. It was great. Stood on his head.
And if we look at the other end, again, a goalie aficionado over here, but Richter Award favorite Yaniv Perret with 18 saves on 20 shots, which equals out to a 950 save percentage overall. But we managed to put 2 in the net against arguably the best goalie right now in the entire NCAA.
Yeah, this is the true Richter Award competition here, Richter Award showdown. Because like you said, you know, this man is unreal. He had not been defeated at all.
Correct.
Like in his entire career with the Bobcats. And so this was such a sweet, I don't even want to say revenge because we hadn't played them before, but such a sweet sense of redemption from Saturday night. You know, what a great game. And again, notable takeaways, what a bounce back after Cornell's puzzling 5-4 loss to Princeton and arguably a lackluster first period against Quinnipiac. We didn't really have it together in the first period. Cornell continues to be undefeated in overtime with their 4th overtime win as of Saturday night. And then Ian Shane had an unbelievable night, supported by a solid defensive core. He made 19 saves in the second period alone. So definitely standing on his head amid an onslaught from Quinnipiac. And then Ben Berard, like you said, your man, the guy you pick as your breakout star, emerges as the hero again, scoring his 2nd game-winning goal with time expiring. His first of the season, after his first of the season coming against Dartmouth. And so, again, down goes number one, and Cornell continues their amazing record against top NCAA teams, winning all 3 games against their top 5 opponents. And so with this weekend, Cornell does fall to 3rd in the ECAC because of the loss to Princeton. So they're 4 points behind Clarkson and 7 points behind Quinnipiac. So, you know, we just did a little bit of of a downgrade in terms of the rankings. However, we have way more games in the season left to make it up, I would say. We definitely have an opportunity. And again, what a great game. The only critique I would offer in terms of the overtime, I think we should work a little bit better on the 3-on-3 play, because that, you know, as Ben Berard was the hero, and you know, it was on the power play. However, there was a time where we were all standing on the edge of our seats because that puck was in our defensive end for quite a long time, and Ian Shane had to literally stand on his head to stop that from going in the net in overtime. Could have easily gone both ways. What an amazing game. But anyways, to get ourselves back on track here, and with that out of the way, fasten your seatbelts, because we've got the class of 2020, number 22, a forward from Burlington, Ontario, Jeff Mellott, who's in the sin bin with us this week. It was an amazing conversation. I always love to hear from our recent alumni, specifically because not only did we get to watch them play as freshmen, but now we get to see what they're doing in the pros. And so it was a great conversation. All right. Welcome back to this edition of the Sin Bin on the Big Red Hockey Cast. And today we have a very, very special guest, Jeff Mellott. Jeff, how's it going, man? I hear you're in COVID protocol. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. It's going well. It's been a slow week, but I'm excited to be on the podcast. Thanks for having me, guys.
No, of course. It's an honor. And so without further ado, we'll just jump right into it. Now, you knew this was coming, so let's get the tough question out of the way. First, it's almost 2 years after the tragic end of the 2019-2020 season. How have you personally moved forward and dealt with the disappointing end to that amazing season?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I kind of like compartmentalized it and just kind of like tucked it away. Like it's always hard. Like when we get guys from like our senior class back together and we talk about like, you know, the classic, like what could have been and, you know, kind of what we thought we deserved as a team. Yeah, it's hard. It's always hard to go back and think about, because I think we did have just so much potential. We had such a great team from, you know, the goal line all the way to the forwards. Like we were just, you know, at least we thought we were just so solid. And it's funny, like, you know, cause I don't really talk about it a whole lot. And when I do, it kind of opens everything back up. And again, you know, makes me appreciate how awesome of a year it was, even though it did get cut short.
Yeah, no, that completely understandable. I know for us, it was definitely absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah. You know, it was a bitter end, but let's move forward to one of, if not the most memorable moments of your Big Red career. So like, let's set the table. Basically, it was January 24th. Dartmouth was in town and you guys tied it up late in the second. We'll just start there. Now, do you remember the feeling in the room heading into the third?
No, not a whole lot. I mean, I feel like those games, they're all, you know, there's so few games in a college season, and there's so much riding on each of those, you know, conference games, that I feel like, you know, anytime we were going into a third period in Lina and we had, you know, we had a shot at winning it, I think because there was just so much riding on each game, we really felt like, you know, we were going to come out with a good effort in every third period. But I don't think it was I don't think it was any different than any other game.
You know what? I think that's in a way a good mindset, you know, just going in there, seeing as any other game, I suppose. But, you know, just to those who forgot it, you know, it didn't take long for you to take the lead for the Big Red. You picked the puck off the wall, fought your way in, and you fought your way in and around the circle and squeezed the puck past the netminder Adrian Clark right in front of Section A. Lina went crazy, and you had a stone-cold Selly for the ages, which is now the iconic photo, which we all know and love. So, with that being said, what do you remember from that goal?
You know what? This is actually really funny. I remember coming around and shooting and not really knowing where it went in, but knowing it went in, and And yeah, I don't think I didn't remember having any, like, you know, doing that celebration, you know, with any purpose in mind or whatever. Is just kind of what happened naturally. But one of the refs, Ryan Knapper, mm-hmm. in the league, I think he was giving me a hard time the night before or something, or maybe I was giving him a hard time, but I remember right before I went and skated down the line, looking at Knapper and him just like shaking his head and laughing at me. Cause it was like, it was just a funny moment where we'd been on each other's case so much, and we had a good relationship throughout our couple of years there. Knapper's a great ref and does a great job, you know, riding that line of good relationships, but also, you know, having a serious approach to the game as well. And mm-hmm. and I remember just kind of laughing with him as right before I went down the line and him just kind of shaking his head at me. But yeah, it was a cool feeling, because, you know, even this year I haven't really been playing in front of a ton of fans. Our home games don't have fans. Last year our home games didn't have, or any of our games didn't have fans. So that was probably one of the last few times where I really felt a crowd erupt.
Wait, so it's basically been bubble hockey for Manitoba, right, then?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. All last year was all bubble hockey, and then we started with full capacity this year, and then, you know, with a new variant coming in, we went down to no capacity.
Oh, man. So, yeah, they just slashed Linus capacity coming into the new semester, so for the Harvard game, it's going to be a little bit more quiet, unfortunately, which sucks.
I saw that.
It's pretty bad. But that iconic goal is for sure a moment none of us are going to forget. And one of the other memorable moments of your senior year was, of course, senior night. And it was the most incredible game against the, quote, overrated Clarkson Golden Knights. And a very special ceremony for you, Noah Ball, then Yanni called us after the game. And a few members of the team were in the crowd that night. And I remember Lina going absolutely nuts when you took your final skate around the rink. Looking back almost 2 years removed, what do you remember from that night, and what kind of feelings does it evoke? Because at the time, nobody knew it was going to be the last game. Like, that's the game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that definitely, it makes me emotional to think about. Not knowing that would be my last game, that's kind of the coolest way to go out, with just all that just like major overpour of support from, you know, from the fans and from the students. And it kind of just, you know, for me, it kind of encapsulated what playing at Cornell for 4 years meant to me. You know, it's cool to have like all everybody's family there, and I don't know. It really kind of just, you know, stops me in my tracks when I think about how much that night would have meant to me. And Yanni and Noah and even Connor Murphy, we just had such a great time there. It was really cool. Yeah. It's kind of hard to talk about. Yeah.
Well, I definitely imagine. I think that's, because looking back on it, I mean, I remember that night thinking, oh, you know, this is just any other game. It's just senior night. Like, you know, why is it going to matter that much? And then lo and behold, all the stuff happens after that. And you're like, wow, that's actually the last game for, you know, the majority of these guys, not only you guys, but like in effect was the senior night for everybody else that was seniors after you.
Yeah.
With the exception of Haskin and Betts and Locke. I mean, that's crazy. But looking at your Big Red career as a whole, you know, you led the Big Red along with many other Cornell legends. Like I said, Yanni Caldas, Matty G, Alec McRae, big shout out, man. Hope you got out of COVID protocol. Right. And Morgan Barron, to name a few, to two amazing ECAC championship runs. And what was so special about being a part of those teams with those guys? I know, you know, 2019 in particular was heartbreaking because you lost to Clarkson, but I'm sure like every run, you know, the team has a special part about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think every year it's just like you start out and you really have no idea what the year is going to, you know, what the year is going to look like. And I think one of the biggest things that goes into having a successful year and goes into having a not even successful, but memorable year, hockey aside, like just all the amazing road trips and the amazing, you know, weekends is the effort that Schaaf puts in at the beginning of the season to make sure that we're all on board and we all have the same goal in mind. And it's not necessarily, you know, a championship or, you know, winning games, it's the goal is to make sure that everybody's there for each other and everybody's pulling on the same rope. It's really a special thing to be a part of. And you can see how prioritizing that early in the season really has an impact on how well the team does at the end of the season. Like if you have guys that are willing to go out of their way to help each other, are willing to take care of each other on and off the ice, you know, at the rink, away from the rink, it'll take care of itself at the end of the season. Like, and it always does. Guys are just willing to work hard. Guys are willing to sacrifice, and it makes it that much more worth it when at the end of the year, you're playing for championships, you're playing for Ivy League championships and ECAC championships and everything. It's really special. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'll bet. I mean, we actually had Ben Sire on the podcast. Well, Benny Sire. And I asked him this question. He's like, well, you know, it's one thing to utilize the transfer portal and to get a whole bunch of guys that are going to be there for 1 or 2 years, but then you lose the chemistry. The most important part is, like, you know, having a team that gels and a team that's there for each other through thick and thin. And I think what you said fully embodies that kind of spirit of, like, oh, you know, at the end of the day, we don't know how many games we're going to win, but we're sure going to go out there and give it our damn best shot because we got the best chemistry there is.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That goes a long way.
Now, I just want to rewind it a little bit toward the start of your career, basically, like when it was the caterpillar in its, you know, metamorphosis stage, let's say. So, you know, you're a kid from Burlington, Ontario. You moved out west to the AJHL to play for the Brooks Bandits. Now, was it a tough decision to leave home and go play out west instead of playing junior in Ontario?
Yeah, it actually was. I mean, I look back on it now and it should have been a no-brainer. But that was a league that I didn't know much about. My friends didn't know much about. My family didn't know much about. And it was kind of this big unknown. And I was, you know, I had a good year of junior B with the Caledonia Corvairs. And I was happy with that. And I was ready to go back and continue developing with them. But, you know, it was kind of on a whim that I made this decision to go out there and see what it was about. And it ended up being like the best possible move I could have made at that point in my career. You know, I was under a great coach in Ryan Papuano and the organization, you know, the Brooks Bandits were just, you know, they really understood what it took to get players to the Division One level. And even before going out there, playing Division One hockey was kind of, it seemed out of reach. And and going there and developing and kind of being molded into an all-around player and someone who learned how to use their frame and their size, it really made that path much more obtainable and kind of turned it into a very realistic goal for me.
Well, you make it sound almost like a personal, like, Cinderella story in a way, because you then committed to a D1 school, like what you just mentioned. You committed to the Big Red. So, you know, what sold you on Cornell hockey out of all the programs which showed interest in you?
Yeah, it was very, not to say had nothing to do with the hockey, but it was very little to do with the hockey and more so to do with the personal relationships that were formed. Like Ben Sire is one of the best recruiters I've ever had the pleasure of interacting with in that recruitment setting. And it was like very rarely about the hockey. It was just like, you know, what are your life goals? What do you value? You know, this is what we prioritize as a team. This is how we grow individuals, not just hockey players. And Benny had a great relationship with my family, with my mom, my dad. I wasn't able to visit campus before committing, but my mom and dad were able to visit campus. And I just remember my mom being like, this is the place for you. Like it aligned with just all of our family values and kind of, you know, it already had felt like home. It was a good distance from home, but not too far to where my parents couldn't visit all the time. The academics were obviously top notch, and it had already felt like, you know, they were welcoming you to a family before there was even a commitment.
Well, you seem to basically beat me to our next question, which was basically, like, you know, what did it feel, you know, being coached by Schaaf and Benny Sire? You know, obviously all our previous guests have spoken of, I mean, basically the honor to be coached by them, but as an alum, like, you basically touched upon it a bit, you know, what can you tell us about your relationship with these amazing coaches?
Oh, it's, it's hard to like put into words. Like you spend 4 years being not only coached, but just like, yeah, like treated as family by these guys, like Shafe, Benny, Flanny, like endless amounts of times, like bring you into their homes, you know, like organize team events and everything, and just make sure that you're not just a hockey player to them. Like you're valued. And for them to do that, for Shafe to do that for over 25 years, to have that many relationships with that many players, Benny as well, to do it for as long as he's done, and Flanny, of course, too. Like it's not like they're just doing it for one class or one year or one, you know what I mean? One team. It's like, yeah, they're doing it for everybody that comes through. And I feel like that's a major reason why they get such a good production out of players every year, is because it's like you want to do it for them.
Well, then, you know, we could tell that response immediately came straight from the heart. We could immediately tell that. And, you know, I guess it goes without surprise that the Big Red coaching staff are some of the most respected coaches in college hockey. And, you know, it's fantastic to hear about the connections that you have built through your years. And actually, we want to expand upon that, because to that point, we are curious to hear, you know, what players have mentored you over your time with the Big Red.
There's so many. It's cool. When I think of like my first mentor, think of Patty McCarron. And Patty was a guy, you know, from maybe about 45 minutes away from me, and immediately was a guy that just made me feel comfortable, made me feel part of the team, helped me realize what it takes to play at that level. Is somebody that, like, Patty went so far out of his way to make guys just feel like they were already, you know, already a part of this bigger picture, like 1 week into being on campus. And Patty's one of my closest friends still, and I keep up with him, and I'll see him, like, you know, a handful of times every summer. We'll make sure to play golf together and stuff. But, you know, Patty was just the first guy, and he helped me appreciate what goes into, you know, developing that character within a program, and helped me in the mentor process for younger guys as well. But, you know, other guys, Dan Wedman, a guy who doesn't, you know, isn't always thought of in the picture of the hockey aspect of things, but is a pillar of Cornell hockey in terms of, again, mentoring guys, you know, making sure guys have, like, you know, their path in the classroom set up, and helping guys with their careers after hockey. Matt Nuttall, a guy who just, like, again, taught me what it takes to compete, and what it takes to, you know, earn your spot in the lineup every night, and be a leader through example and sacrifice. And, you know, there's so many guys that I'm still really close with, that I still keep up with, you know, texting like multiple times a week, just funny conversation, something pops up and it's an old memory and you just send it to that guy. And, you know, I mentioned Patty and Weds and Nuttall, and it's like, it's barely the tip of the iceberg. Like I feel like each guy I played with, older and younger, has taught me something in some facet, and has helped, you know, mold where my career is at now, for sure.
And clearly they did a great job at doing that. You know, just you mentioning those names, clearly they did a phenomenal job at that.
I definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, and that's a question that we've asked every guest that we've had, and the answers that we've gotten are so, like, vastly different, because it's just very touching to see how many players in this great organization have touched so many younger generations of players and helped them to grow as they progress through the organization. Now, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Now that you've grown your horizons and entered the professional hockey world, so what are some of the perks to professional hockey?
No school.
Yeah.
No school.
Yeah.
You know, I love, right, I really appreciated school and the social aspect of going to class every day and, you know, seeing your friends that you wouldn't really see otherwise, and having this whole other layer of commitment and accountability. It's great. And it's an incredible way to learn a lot about yourself and develop, you know, just a sense of maturity and responsibility away from the rink. But yeah, being being in pro hockey now and just kind of being able to wholeheartedly devote yourself to hockey as a career, it's definitely a privilege for sure.
Yeah. No, I'm going to flip that question around now. What might you miss most about college hockey life now being a professional?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's I don't know. It's hard to say. There's a lot. Like I just miss living in a house, living in a dump of a house with nine guys and no, like it's just a mess of everybody having troubles with, you know, hockey and school all at the same time. And nobody's got life figured out and everybody's just kind of on this, you know, this track of figuring it out as you go. And all you can do is like walk down the hallway and just go vent in your like best friend's room about whatever final you have going on, or, you know, how hard practice was that day, or how early you got to get up the next morning. And it's just like, you know what, we're all in it together. That's probably the thing I miss most, is just like living with nine of your best friends.
Yep, of course. And sometimes in abject poverty you could exert. No, totally. Hilarious. No, but that's all part of the experience. Now, your signing after going undrafted is a true accomplishment. So with that, and for those of you who don't know, you signed in May of 2021 with the Jets. So what advice do you have for those players who have gone undrafted about keeping the faith? Because that's a very big, I think a topic for young players today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the draft is, it's such a small part of it. And you really see that when you get into professional hockey. Like I was lucky because COVID, you know, however many doors it closed, it also opened plenty of doors too. And I got a lot of opportunity and I was, you know, fortunate enough to have the, you know, experience at Cornell that prepared me for that type of opportunity. But I think the biggest thing that helped me in terms of, you know, being an undrafted player is, you know, finding a role and, you know, finding something that I could contribute every night and finding something that brought value to a team. And, you know, it's for a lot of guys, it's not always, you know, offensive production or the flashy things or, you know, being on a power play or whatever. And it's, you know, every team needs guys that forecheck hard. Every team needs guys that are defensively sound, that can penalty kill. And I think for young players now, especially with, you know, CHL drafts happening, USHL drafts happening, NHL drafts happening, you know, it can be easy to compare yourself to those first round picks where, you know, a hockey team's not made up of completely first round picks. You're going to have guys that need to fill roles. So I think if you're a young player and you're looking at yourself and you want to find a way to bring value, I think you find a role that is needed and you find a way to do that to the best of your ability.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer. And I mean, well, certainly all your hard work is paying off. And I mean, you've done well playing for the Moose in the Jets organization. And you know, I mean, at your stage, you never know. Like there's one day you may get the call and all of a sudden you're playing for the Jets. And, you know, but what have you enjoyed most about your time in Winnipeg and Manitoba? That's a place where hockey is more important than anything else. Like what have you enjoyed most about that experience?
Yeah. The community here is great. Everybody cares an immense amount about hockey in Winnipeg, and the community has been incredible to me in the last year and a half. You know, I think we have a really, really great group here. It's similar to the format we had at Cornell, where guys are just willing to go out of their way to make sure everybody's doing well and everybody's, you know, in a good headspace. And we have a lot of guys that really look out for each other. And I think our team chemistry on and off the ice has been a big factor in terms of our success. Like we've done really well the past two seasons. And I think it's just because everybody is on board and willing to, you know, willing to put the team ahead of themselves. It's cliche, but it's what has translated most for us lately. Even with all this COVID trouble, we've been on the road for the last 14 days and we've had guys get called up. We've had, you know, guys in COVID protocol. There's a tweet came out, you know, mid last week, we're headed into a game and it said we were missing 14 of our regular players. And, you know, we had an extremely successful road trip. We won that night. And I think we went 5-1-2 on the road trip. And I think the thing that's been most fun is just being a part of a group that really is ready to sacrifice and is ready to find a way to win.
Oh, that's great. And well, since you've been with the Moose, have you had the chance to share the ice with Yanni Caldas, who plays for Bakersfield, or Mully? Who's
No. I was thinking about this the other week. I haven't played with one of my college teammates yet. I mean, we've got Mully in Cleveland, Yanni's in Bakersfield, Greener is in Syracuse, like Morgan has been in Hartford.
Yeah, well, depending on the day, yeah.
Yeah, depending on the day, hopefully never again. Like, hopefully he plays for the Rangers for the rest of his career. But, yeah, I'm trying to think, Jeff Kubiak is in Bridgeport. I've been dying to play against one of my former teammates, and I see it all the time, guys meeting up at the red line in warmups with their old college buddies, and I'm really looking forward to the day I get to cross over.
Wait, yeah, I just thought about this. Have you played against Matt Molson? He plays for the Bears, doesn't
no,
he?
No, not yet. Yeah, Matt.
I was gonna say, Molson, like a big red legend there.
Hershey Bears, yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm trying to, there's a bunch of guys, and I've yet to cross over with any of them.
Well, no. Well, hopefully you get the chance to. That'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be cool.
Now, before we move on to the slapshot round, we have to say that we were surprised to find out your brother Mike is a pro MMA fighter. That was a huge shock, massive surprise to us. So, as I'm sure you know, it's an incredibly difficult sport at the ground level, and it seems like Mike is beginning to ascend to fight on the international level. So, that being said, were you his first opponent? Did you two ever fight as kids?
There was, you know, he's 5 years older than me. And there's a time that maybe I was 5 years old, he's 10 years old. And he was, you know, he was a smaller guy at 10. And I happened to be a lot bigger at 5 years old. And I think we were close about the same size. And whenever he pick on me, my mom would always be like, careful, like one day he's going to be a lot bigger than you. Like he's going to be able to. And turns out, even though I am a bit bigger than him, I don't think I could ever, there will never be a time where I will be able to beat him up. So, I was definitely a rag doll until I was about 14 years old. It was like, we'd be watching it on TV and he'd be like, oh, it's a cool move. Get on the carpet. Like we're going to try this one out. But yeah, he's just ascending into his UFC debut right now. His UFC debut is April 9th. In Brooklyn, New York.
Shout out Brooklyn.
Yeah, shout out Brooklyn. Sorry, man. Should be an awesome fight. But he's like, I mean, he's worked so hard for it. And he's, whenever there's like an up or a down in my career, and I think about like, oh man, like I need this to happen now, or I need to, you know, hit this opportunity in stride. I picture his career and how he's navigated so many different obstacles and how he's always turned a negative into a positive and taking time away from MMA, but completely focused on, you know, his Brazilian jiu-jitsu and got his black belt in BJJ and worked on his wrestling. And he's somebody I look up to in pretty much every aspect of my career and somebody I'm extremely, extremely excited to watch basically begin his UFC career.
Sounds like you're a very good brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you two are very tight, in fact.
Yeah. No, he's a good buddy of mine.
And I think this transitions nicely into the next one because, you know, it's no secret that you were a bit of an enforcer on the ice for the Big Red, and you certainly weren't afraid to shy away from a scrap. So do you think that fighting instinct was in your DNA?
You know what? No, like it's always different in college because, I don't know, it's like, it's hard to explain. Like I'm not running around looking for anything like that. I mean, it's nice having that resource in Mike because, I mean, anytime he puts a pair of skates on, it's like he's thinking about fighting in a hockey sense. And it's great to learn from him and have that intel and kind of keep that in the back pocket. But I definitely don't want people going around thinking just because he's in the UFC that I'm looking for it too.
Well, I don't think we could expect. Well, you're telling us that we can't expect the triangle chokehold.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't know if it translates as well.
Yeah, it's all good. But you know what? With that, you know, thank you so much, Jeff, for joining us on the Sin Bin. But you listeners already know what's up next. It's the Slapshot round right after this. All right, welcome to the Slapshot round, where we ask hard-hitting, fun questions and have you answer them as quick as you can. Now, per tradition, we always got to ask question number one. Are you good to go, Jeff?
Good to go. Let's rock and roll.
All right, I like that. Well, earlier, we talked about your iconic celly. Now, which Big Red player you shared the ice with had the best cellies after they put one in the net?
I want to say Ben Berard, like the guy's I want to say he's always got like a bow and arrow or like a sword tuck or something. He's putting his all into every celly.
Have you caught him practicing these before, like beforehand?
No, I never seen him working on them.
All right. No, just curious.
Actually, now, you know what? Can I change that answer?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Can I change that answer? Okay. I'd say Connor Murphy. Connor Murphy had my favorite cellies of all time. They may not have been the prettiest, but there was always something to laugh about when he came back to the bench after a goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. So now the Big Red have had some exciting series earlier this month. So what is a college hockey program you most regret never having the opportunity to play against?
Ooh, especially after watching the sweep a couple weekends ago, North Dakota. I play with a bunch of North Dakota guys here on the Moose. And that was definitely a fun weekend to watch. And they're always they're a very historic program. And I think that would be definitely a fun team to beat.
All right. Yeah. It seems like that was always fan favorite would be the closest term to describe it, just that everyone was looking forward to playing, you know, in North Dakota. So
yeah,
it kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, with that, we got to move on to this one. Who would you rather get in a scrap with on the ice? Your MMA fighter brother, Mike, or the New York Islanders' very own Zdeno Chara?
I'd have a better shot against Mike. it would be cool to tell people you fought Zdeno Chara.
Yeah.
Watching him fight this week.
Yeah. I mean, he's a gigantic Slovak. Let me just tell you that.
Wait. Interesting question. How tall is your brother?
He's 6'1". He's 6'1".
Okay. Yeah. I think your brother could take Zdeno Chara. I mean, I don't know. Although on the other hand, it is Zdeno Chara. I mean, come on.
But yeah. Like, yeah. I think if there were no refs and it got to the ground, maybe he'd stand a chance. But, yeah, I don't know if you're going to stop on Zdeno Chara.
No. Sounds good. And now I'm going to switch gears to this next question. So red or white, like your favorite color for the Big Red?
Red.
Red? Interesting take. You know, we've had this different question with many different guests that we've had on. Like, do you think that the Big Red is overdue for a uniform upgrade? Like, do you think we need to tweak the uniform a little bit or just stay the same?
You know what? With college hockey, it's almost like for those few teams that have such a classic presence, like you think, I think Cornell, Boston University, like teams that just have those iconic jerseys, I think I would vote stay. I would vote hold on to those, just like keep them classic. It's almost like Lina. Like I wouldn't have wanted, if I played 2 years in Lina the way it was, I wouldn't have wanted an upgrade or a Reno or anything.
Yeah.
You want it like it's classic. And I think, you know, as time goes on, it's harder and harder to find, you know, programs that carry that kind of weight.
Yeah. And now, I guess I'm going to follow that up with, being in the Manitoba Moose organization and being a part of the Jets, like, did you ever get a chance to take some shots on Connor Hellebuck during preseason or in practice?
Yeah, just through preseason and practice and stuff. I don't think any of them went in.
Nice. Well, yeah, I was gonna follow it up with, like, what's it like to go one-on-one against against, you know, it's Connor Hellebuck, man.
Yeah, guy takes up a lot of net.
He's huge, man. He's like one of the tallest people I've ever seen. I'm pretty short though, only like 5'7", man. But you know, but if you had to live in one city for the rest of your life, which one is it?
Oh, that's tough. Oh, I wouldn't want to. I'd want to bounce around. I would just have to, if I had to pick one for the rest of my life, I think I'd just pick Toronto, just because.
Oh, Toronto. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I'd love to go live in New York for a little bit, go back and live in Calgary for a little bit, stay in Winnipeg for a little bit. You know what I mean? Nice. And kind of appreciate everywhere that I've got to live and appreciate it, you know, without the commitment of hockey. Cause you know, you live in a city and you spend so much time playing hockey that you don't always get to do the little things, but you see them and you see people getting to experience that. So it would be cool to be able to kind of go back to each place I'm familiar with, but take full advantage.
Well, I'm sure since you're traveling around, wouldn't you miss Portage and Maine though? I mean,
Yeah, a lot of great cities, especially while I'm stuck here in Iowa. Yeah. Maybe come back and live here for a while.
Yeah, nice. And to follow that up, what's a chant or tradition you would like to see the Line of Faithful bring into the mix? Like, I know we have a list of all those storied, you know, traditional chants. Is there anything else that, you know, we would bring into the fray to make it better?
I don't know. Like, even in terms of, like, when I talk to my buddies here about college hockey and stuff, it's always like, it always comes up like, oh, like we got a guy who played for Harvard on the team this year. And it's like, oh yeah, we'd go into Cornell and get peppered by fish. Or it's like, I got a buddy on Clarkson and he's like, oh man, those newspapers, like guys are talking about jingling the keys. I think the Faithful do such a great job of kind of keeping those traditions alive and you know, maximizing the impact that a fan base can have on a hockey game, that like, I don't even know if I could have any input in terms of what they could do to make it any better.
Yeah on the fish is certainly a story tradition. I remember the rumor going around in 2020 before that Harvard game that Martha Pollock had personally called Wegmans to try and get them to stop selling fish to Cornell students. but no they said no, are you kidding me, like this is the day we sell out of all
our best fish. Week
yeah. Yeah, the best week. And it's like, no, great.
All right. Which country has the best gravy?
The best gravy?
Yep. I think we know where this is going.
Canada. It's got to be.
Yeah. We know where this is going. Because the next
Canada. One... Did you ask Ben Sire that question?
Yeah, we actually asked him about gravy, Canadian gravy more specifically, which, you know, to us Americans is basically ketchup. Yeah. And so we just have to confirm with you. Is this true? Is Canadian gravy ketchup?
It's slang for sure. Like, and it's funny. The reason I asked Benny this question is because one time I referred to Canadian or ketchup as Canadian gravy, and he goes, "Oh, well, that's a good one. I'm gonna use that one." And so he kept it. Or he started using that after we joked about it. But honestly, yeah, it is. Canadian gravy is ketchup. Like, I'll go to ketchup before I go to gravy 9 times out of 10.
Fair enough.
And wait, now. Ben Sire had mentioned that he's got to put Canadian gravy on almost everything. He said it goes well with mac and cheese or something.
Totally. Yes, he did. Totally.
Yeah.
Really? Mac and cheese, eggs, grilled cheese. Yeah. Anything. Pot pie. Oh, yeah.
I have tried ketchup with grilled cheese. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty good.
And it's crazy when you, like, for Benny or I, like, if you're back home, like, that's just normal. Like, that's like, you wouldn't think that that's a weird thing to do. And then you go to the States and it's funny. You see the differences between guys that are from, like, you know, somewhere in New York or Minnesota or something like that, and how the shift between, like, across Canada, it's like all the same, but then you go down to anywhere in the States and it's like, yeah, you guys look at you like you got 10 heads.
That was certainly the highlight of our discussion with Benny Sire was the in-depth discussion about what constitutes proper good Canadian food.
Yeah.
No, we're gonna shift it on to a little bit of a different subject, but any famous Winnipeggers you have been able to meet during your time there?
No, I'm trying to think. No, not many celebrities residing in Winnipeg, to be honest.
That's all right. I was just curious. I mean, although he was not born in Canada, I mean, to my knowledge, I've only met one Winnipeg hailing celebrity, which was Chris Jericho. Like, this was back when he was in WWE. I was 9. It was WrestleMania 26. It was pretty cool. But yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah. Not yet. Hopefully soon.
Hopefully. If you see Chris Jericho, you know, you tell him Sean said hello.
Deal.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And I'm going to switch gears a little bit here. But if you could get tickets to see one concert in 2022, who are you seeing?
Ooh. You know, it's hard because there really haven't been any concerts lately. I think if I'm going to see one person, I want to see Chris Stapleton probably.
Oh yeah. Dude, that was the best answer I've ever heard, man. I love country music. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Chris Stapleton's the man.
I feel like he would just, I mean, I've seen him once before and he was great, but I feel like after this long of a hiatus from live music, that guy would be a voice I would want to hear.
Yeah, be amazing. I know we had an in-depth discussion about country music with Matt Steinberg because he's really into that stuff. You know, he's got the Carhartts, got the all that good stuff.
Of course he does.
And then what's the worst thing an opposing fan section has ever yelled at you? Now, I can't imagine it can get any worse than what the Line of Faithful hurls at people on a daily basis, but like,
I lucked out to never have to play against the Line of Faithful. I don't know, man. It's hard to think back. Quinnipiac could get pretty brutal. Yep. They've got those Teletubbies that sit in the student section.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Costumes, and they never said anything personally or whatever, but they'd nag you like crazy, and we'd be doing our pregame warm-up, our dry land warm-up, and these guys in Teletubby costumes are just like not giving you any personal space and stuff, and they're trying to pretend to warm up right beside you. So I think Quinnipiac student section does a good job of keeping it fresh and maybe not hitting you with any personal lines, but kind of getting in your head a little bit before the game.
Yeah, I got to say the loudest I've ever seen it get in an opposing, in an opponent's rink. I drove to Boston for the Harvard game at Harvard. It is unbelievable the amount of noise that the Cornell fans can make opposed to the like one section of Harvard of kids. Harvard.
Yeah, it's a home game.
I know, it's a home game. Yeah. And that was just crazy because and apparently I found out it's free for Harvard students to go and nobody goes. And then it's $30 if you want to go and you're not a Harvard student. So that's how they make all their money. They make it all off the Cornell students who come and watch the game.
Smart.
Crazy. Yeah.
They know they're not going to miss it.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess to follow that up, out of all the Big Red players who you captained, which are now themselves becoming leaders, playmakers, and even Hobby Baker nominees, whose development do you want to take the most credit for?
You know, I don't think I could take credit for anybody's development. I mean, there's so much that goes into a guy, you know, progressing over the 4 years, and I'm just glad to be a part of guys' progression that are you know, Hobie nominees and successful college players. One guy we were just talking about, one guy I loved to death and still do, Matt Steinberg, the guy is just like, when he got on campus, he was just so excited. And he's just this, it was like, he, you could see his eyes, like every time we go out, every time we go to the rink, like he just loved to be around the guys. And he was somebody I ended up playing the second half of my senior year with. I played with Matt and Jack Malone. And as a senior, like looking at that now, I think looking back when I was first kind of put on that line with those guys, it was kind of like, oh man, like this is my senior year. I want to like really have an impact, and I want to be playing with, you know, the oldest guys, the most experienced guys and stuff. But I think one thing I was really proud of was the impact I was able to have as a part of that line, and kind of, you know, learning from Matt and Jack, and teaching Matt and Jack kind of, you know, Cornell hockey in a way, for the second half of that senior year as well. And that was something that the three of us were pretty proud of for sure, as being having an impact as a group of three.
Yeah.
I'm very sure.
That was an interesting story about the pregame cookies, though.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Who would have told you this?
Oh, it was, well, in all honesty, it was Shaner, but like Matt Steinberg did corroborate it. And then I asked him, I'm like, okay, well, have you ever had insomnia cookies? And he's like, what? No. And I'm like, well, yeah. now I gotta get you insomnia cookies. So I'm making good.
Looks like promise. I didn't teach him enough, man. Insomnia cookies was I hate to admit it, insomnia cookies was my spot, man. If you ask Tristan Mullen, or you know, you ask Cody Haskin, and they'd for sure know I had a soft spot for insomnia cookies. But I think what you guys are referring to, what are you referring to with the pregame cookies?
With like I guess it was before the Ohio State game, his freshman year, what was 2019, 2020. I guess he like ate, like had cookies before the game. And then like every game since then, I guess he's just like eating a cookie or something.
He's gone back to cookies. Yeah. There's always a funny, it's always funny with the cookies before, like after pregame meal. Cause they're like, if for some reason there always seems to be like one or two cookies less than how many guys are there. So it's like, if you're one of the last guys, if somebody takes like two, you know what I mean? Somebody ends up taking like three cookies or something like that. And they get to the end and there's like four guys and one cookie left, and everyone's looking at each other like, what the heck's going on? But that's funny. No, there's a lot of funny stories of like, honestly, Austin McGrath and I always had a funny, like always had the funny setup with the cookies at pregame. You'd come back to the table and like, one of us would like sit down our silverware on top of a napkin. And then like the other guy would open up, like fold up the napkin, and there'd be, you know, a cookie sitting under there, and guys are trying to find like funny ways to sneak cookies and stuff. But yeah, pregame is another thing I miss about playing at school, because we had these tables at the rink, and each table kind of had its own, took pride in its own identity. And we kind of would get these debates going and stuff, and it would be table versus table, and it's just like 30 guys all barking at each other, and that was another great thing, and just little funny stories like that always come out of everybody eating the same meal at the same time, you know, same day of the week every week for a full season. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun too.
Yeah. And okay, this, we got to settle this once and for all. What is the best Cornell dairy product? If you're at the dairy bar, you know,
oh man, the dairy bar is good. I think I would get flack if I didn't say that the Big Red Refuel
is
the best Cornell dairy product out there. Okay, those are lifesavers. It's like you could finish a workout and like be running to class, have no time or anything, and it's like boom, Big Red Refuel. Like, yeah. At this point in my life, I barely take in any dairy, but I think if I had a Big Red Refuel, you know, available to me at all times, the story might be a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now that you've just said that, their sales are going to go through the roof, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully.
Be like the yeah. And
all right. It's
crazy.
So who was the best with the Ox during your time with Cornell?
You guys might kill me for saying this. Liam Motley. 100%. I think he might have been the most controversial DJ we ever had. We had some bad DJs, but I think Liam Motley was the best DJ I ever got to experience while at Cornell. He might not have played the song that everybody wanted to hear, but he played songs that got people talking. He stimulated some good conversation with whatever music he would play, and he loved it.
I'm just gonna ask you why, because this is the hot take. Because Betts, I believe when we had Kyle Betts on here, we asked him the same question, and he's like, "Well, I can't exactly tell you who the best is, but I can tell you Liam Motley was the worst."
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he said that.
And that's why he was the best, because nobody liked the music he played. he would do it on purpose. He'd sit in the corner and he would press play, and he would look around the room until people realized how bad of a song it was. And as soon as people would start booing him and yelling
for him, what's an example of that?
He would turn it up. I don't even, just like bad, like he'd go on YouTube and find like bad sound bites and stuff.
Oh my
like,
god.
Oh, he went above and beyond.
Yeah. He'd going for extra credit. He'd play like garbage dubstep, and like he'd play these songs that were just, they were meant to be bad. Like it wasn't like it wasn't his taste in music was bad. He had good taste in music. I know he did. He just loved to like
he just loved being a meme. That's what he loved being. Yeah.
He loved being a meme, man. Yeah.
Oh man.
He's too funny.
We really have to ask Liam this question. We have to ask him.
You got to get him to put together like a top five most controversial list.
Yes. We're going to have Liam Motley curate a top five most controversial playlist for us.
Yeah. Perfect. Now, speaking about the Ox, how about in the big leagues? Is there like any good music taste in the Jets org?
Yeah. So at school, it was mostly one guy would be responsible for kind of the day-to-day stuff. And if guys wanted to hop on, they could, but it was usually one guy's responsibility. Right. And that was kind of picked at the beginning of the year, and that would last the whole season. Here, it's kind of just, there's an iPad that guys go up, and one guy will take it for this afternoon. And then one guy will take it before practice. And one guy, you know, kind of just whoever's there and feels like taking that initiative will do that. So you get a good mix, and we don't have any Liam Motleys that are looking to looking to be controversial and stir the pot. Nice.
All right, man, I'm still having to get the Liam Motley thing. You say he was the best because he was the worst. That still got me giggling. Sorry. Who is the player you are most honored to have played with or against?
Oh, have at school or where?
Anywhere.
We could do all of the above.
Anywhere. I mean, at school, the guy I'm probably most honored to play with. That's a tough one. There's so many awesome players. Like, I mean, oh, I don't know. I'm trying to go down the list here, and like immediately when you first asked that question, I thought the guy I'm most honored to play with is Connor Murphy. Got 3 amazing years with Connor at school. He's one of my best friends. I lived with him, you know, for 3 years, and the guy will be a best friend for the rest of my life. And he's probably the guy I'm most honored to have been able to play with. We played minor hockey together. We played a year junior hockey together, and we've only gotten closer, and I hope we continue to only get closer. Guy I'm most honored to play with, just due to sheer, you know, hockey ability, and probably like coolest thing I'll be able to say at the end of my career, at least at this point, is Cale Makar. I got to play a year and a little bit with Cale, and as he was young and his trajectory was just like this, and obviously it hasn't stopped on that path either, but he was really cool to play with when we were young, because he was just a quiet, humble kid, and he was ready to work every day, and he just got light years better every game. Like you blink and he's a new player. He's faster, stronger, making better reads, and it's been really, really cool to watch his progression, because he's still that same, you know, humble kid who's just doing the work.
Yeah. I was going to say, I saw him on Puck Personality a couple of days ago. He doesn't seem like, you know, he's very humble, down to earth kind of guy.
Yeah.
And Oh yeah, we have to ask this because, you know, you've been in Winnipeg and Manitoba. So, were you a part of the Cool Grey Cup celebrations when the Blue Bombers won last month?
No. I got to think. Well, it was tough cuz they were, I don't follow the CFL like crazy, but they were playing against the Hamilton Ticats. And we got a couple Southern Ontario guys on the team, and one of my closest friends on the team, Johnny Kovacevic, is a Grimsby guy, so he's just on the other side of Hamilton. I grew up in Waterdown, which is you know, Hamilton, part of the Hamilton District School Board and everything, and so I affiliate with Hamilton as I was growing up. And so I think when the Grey Cup was going on, I was more so rooting for Hamilton to win on the home soil. So it was tough because I think they weren't doing a parade because of COVID restrictions as well. So that was something we didn't get to participate in as well. And I think COVID was just kind of on the rise again. And it was a little bit, maybe a little bit frowned upon to go out and celebrate that while we were still navigating the season. But yeah, I think I felt more so inclined to cheer for Hamilton in that scenario.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, full disclosure, I have not, I just heard about them like about 2 days before this. So, yeah. But no, I got to go check out the CFL now.
Yeah.
Curious. Yeah. But so which former Big Red teammate do you think would sound the best mic'd up during a game? Because I have been a long advocate for this. I want to see that content, man.
Yeah. I think you might get the best content out of Maxi. Like, you might get the best content out of Max Andreev.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, he's right? A guy, he's a funny, funny guy where I think he's just talking nonstop, and he's getting into other guys. He's, you know, like rooting on his teammates and everything. But yeah. I think Maxi would give good content too.
Yeah. Great. That's amazing. And has your brother Mike given you any fighting or grappling tips to help survive NHL fights?
Yeah. Yeah. So I touched on that before in the sin bin, but yeah, anytime he gets skates on, it's like, he's grabbing both shoulders and he's kind of trying to figure out what it would be like to fight on the ice and stuff. And he's kind of dissecting it in his head. And I feel like in recent years, that's more so his approach is dissecting and kind of instructing fighting. He took a break from competing in cage fighting for a handful of years and really honed in on coaching and found a passion there. And so you can really see it come out anytime we're, you know, on playing pond hockey or we're, I mean, really, that's the only time we ever both get our skates on. But if he ever comes home, sometimes I'll go to the gym with him and just kind of mess around and hit the bag. And he's always like picking apart what like scenarios on the ice that might come into place.
That being said, what do you want your legacy at Cornell to be?
Oh, man. I think just like a good teammate, man. Like, there's whenever I talk about like my time at school, it's like the way it unfolds is there's so much more to hockey. Like you've got your social life, you've got, you know, your academics, you've got hockey as well. And it's like, you're not just navigating a career in hockey. You're navigating so much more. And I think, you know, something that they instill in us from day one is like, you're there to grow as a person, and you're there to help other people grow and help other people navigate this extremely fun and exciting time of their lives. So I think, you know, when I look back on what I hope I did the most as a player at Cornell is just be a good teammate.
I got you. Would it be weird to describe that as a humble answer, Alex? I think it's humble.
No, not at all. That's probably one of the best answers you can give to that question, man.
Yeah, that is fair. Yeah, you know what? That's fair. That's fair. And I mean, I guess with that, we ended on a semi-sentimental note. You know, it happens. It happens.
Yeah, but I mean, any other way.
Yeah, look exactly. At that. Yeah. So, I mean, we got to give you a gigantic mammoth thank you, Jeff. I mean, it's always... Seriously, again, like Alex, I know you've said this and I always have to agree with you on it, but you know, these things wouldn't be possible without guys like you. You know, you basically etched the road for future players. And I mean, you made an impact. We literally couldn't do this without you guys. So again, like, we have to thank you.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an honor to be on the pod, and it's a ton of fun. Like, I don't always get to kind of go back and relive this stuff and think about, you know, who are my most impactful teammates or who are my funniest teammates and stuff. And it's awesome to kind of just be able to unpack that and relive it for a quick sec. So yeah, I mean, Alex, Sean, like, thanks for having me, guys. This has been a total blast.
Of course. It's our pleasure. It's always our pleasure, our honor.
Yeah, true honor, man.
You know, again, just, I guess we could also, on behalf of the listeners, thank you once again. And, you know, best of luck to you and the Manitoba Moose. And of course, let's go Big Red, baby.
Go Big Red.
Always good to hear from our boy Jeff Malott. What an amazing dude. Really chill, very eloquent, just loves to share his stories, huh, Sean?
Yeah, we always say this about these players because we always think that they're a larger than life sort of personality, but you know, when we get to talk to them, they're relatively down to earth. Again, it's almost like a cliche that we're playing over and over again, but really, like, you would expect, I mean, this guy signed with the Jets. You know, yeah. he signed with the Winnipeg Jets, and then, you know, you would figure, you know, watch your turf a little bit, but no, this guy, really chill, really cool, even off the mic, off the air. He held interesting conversations with us.
Yeah.
Overall, really cool dude.
No, exactly. What a guy. I remember he had also teased a impromptu homecoming from his COVID protocol quarantine in Iowa to come watch the Quinnipiac game. I don't think he ever did, though. I don't know if he ever followed up on that because of the COVID protocols at Cornell, but
yeah,
you know, would have been amazing to share the Section B with him, and quite an amazing experience just to sit down and have a nice chat. And so the week ahead, but actually, you know what, before we get to the week ahead from this Saturday, we have about five days
yes,
until the Big Red tussles with the Harvard Crimson at home for the first time. And be sure, again, Tuesday, 10 a.m., again, get ready for the website to crash. Get your tickets. So, anyway, the week ahead, the homestand continues. At Lina on Friday night, January 28th versus Dartmouth. With Princeton's win over Cornell, you know, like we said, Dartmouth fell to last in the ECAC this past weekend. And the Big Green are riding a six-game conference winless streak. And they've only scored more than two goals once in that span. So they've really struggled offensively. And now Cornell has had trouble against Dartmouth in the past couple of years. And, of course, Sean and I both remember that crazy 5-4 victory on the road earlier this year. And also in the 2019-2020 season, Dartmouth was actually the first team to end Cornell's undefeated record. And so, you know, the Dartmouth, again, and I'll say this, you know, with every week ahead, we can't sleep on the teams that are hungry and that have been losing, because I'm telling you that they get one goal and then they just go. It's crazy.
They're like little piranhas.
Yeah.
Look what happened with Princeton. They're little piranhas.
Yeah. Really is. It's unbelievable. And so players to watch for Dartmouth, they're without their star goaltender, Adrian Clark, from the 2019-2020 season. I believe he's gone into investment banking, but don't quote me on that. hasn't played hockey. So, you know, anyways, current players on the roster to watch. Number 15 freshman forward, Sean Chisholm, leads Dartmouth with 11 points, and he enters the weekend on a four-game point streak with three goals and an assist in that span. And so, again, not exactly a team to sleep on, but still a team that has been struggling offensively, and we got to keep an open mind with all these games, you know, I really think. Anyways, so the marquee matchup, Saturday night, Sean, take it away, my man.
at Lina, Saturday night, January 29th.
Got the WWE vibes there. I like it.
The Cornell Big Red will be facing Harvard, one of the oldest rivalries in hockey, of course. Harvard comes to upstate New York with quite an average record in their last five games of ECAC play at a record of 2-3. Harvard has had some trouble keeping the puck out of their net recently, letting in three or more goals in each of their last six games. Now, Harvard
quite uncharacteristic. Interesting.
Yeah, it is a little weird there. And I mean, Harvard enters the weekend ranking just inside the top 20 in the NCAA and fourth in the ECAC entering Tuesday, pending a Tuesday game versus RPI. So we have to be on the lookout for that, because again, anything can happen. Once again, we got to throw it back onto that Princeton game, because it happens. Stuff happens. With that being said, the Big Red will be looking for revenge on Harvard after losing their first game in conference play at the beginning of the season 3-2. I remember how infuriating that was. But again, if we can redeem ourselves at any point, this would be the time, especially.
Yeah. This would be. I was there. It hurt. It hurt. You drive, 6 hours and we didn't get it. It was still a great game. Not taken away from the fact that it was a great game, but man, it's a long ride home.
That is true. And once again, like you said, you want to get those tickets as soon as you can, because I know those things will be flying out like no tomorrow. As soon as
the black market for them is going to be insane. People are going to make their entire paycheck in like one day when they resell those tickets. Oh God.
But you know, I guess those tickets, one could argue, are worth the price, especially when you're up against players such as junior forward Nick Abruzzese, or Abruzzese, as we apparently have learned that they call him Abruzzese. Very interesting.
I don't know. Yeah. It's just the Crimson announcer at the Bright Landry Hockey Center, man. I don't know what he's doing. But
Nick leads Harvard's offense, leading the team with 21 points and 16 assists. And that puts him at third in the ECAC in points and first in the ECAC in assists. So it looks like we got a playmaker on our hands that, you know, we have to keep an eye for.
Yeah.
And well, there is sort of a caveat that we have to mention, and it's that he did not play last weekend, possibly due to an injury, but he was recently named to the U.S. Olympic team. Now, Alex, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, all these, you look at the NCAA, right? And they named these guys to our Olympic squad. We have Drew Commesso from BU. We beat them. Correct. We have three guys from Nodak, I believe. Don't quote me on it, but Nodak, we swept them, man. Come on. And now, like you said, Nick Abruzzese and I believe there's another guy from Harvard as well. I mean, don't they have another guy on the Olympic team as well?
Correct. Sean Farrell. That was going to be the other player to watch.
Oh yeah. Sean Farrell. That's right. I don't know. It just boggles my mind. I know we have more Canadians than Americans on the Olympic team, but I still think, you know, some of our players deserve a shot. I mean, in my mind, Andrei Pianichka could be starting for the Czech Republic. You know, that's just my thought though.
We only love Pianichka over here.
Yeah.
Said, do you think there is an agenda against the Big Red, Alex?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just look at the Everything College Hockey Instagram page. Again, I love those guys. I listen to the podcast, but geez, just no love, no love.
Our mortal enemies. Well, not really enemies, but we'll see. With that being said, we did bring up Sean Farrell, who was also named to the U.S. Olympic team. He's second on the team in terms of scoring. I mean, with 19 points, you know, that's a whopper. Yeah. And he's been on a roll recently with 7 points, 3 goals and 4 assists in his last 4 games. So we have a playmaker and we have a guy who's on a hot streak.
And if I remember anything about Sean Farrell, it's because he scored the first goal against the Big Red at the game at Harvard.
I believe so.
He got the breakaway, and this kid has some sweet hands. And then the other thing I remember from that game was the announcer was so annoying. He's like, the Harvard goal was scored by Sean Farrell. It was such a copycat of Cornell. I think Arthur Mintz does it better. That's just my opinion.
Hey. And also, by the way, Sean Farrell did not get to play last weekend. Similar to that scenario with Nick Abruzzese, however you want to call it. Nick A, how about that?
yeah, that's fair.
But again, both of them, both called to the U.S. Olympic team, both did not play last weekend. Could that hurt their momentum? I'll be honest, I don't think so. I think it'll actually only fuel them more, especially, you know, being called to the U.S. Olympic team.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, if I had to bet on it, remember we had this discussion about, you know, the teams being in quarantine before they had to go to the Olympics. Yeah. I think actually we may not even see Sean Farrell or Nick Abruzzese in at this game. We will see Casey Dornbach. I just love saying that name, Dornbach. But I couldn't get that out of my head after the game because he had the assist on the Sean Farrell goal. It was hilarious. Yep. But let's also not forget their junior goalie, Mitchell Gibson. And full disclosure, he follows me on Instagram, so this is pretty interesting. And he got the start in Harvard's home game versus Cornell and will most likely start again. He's 3-1 in his last four games, posting a 2.0 goals against average and a 9.21 save percentage in that span. And he's ranked 31 on the national goalie leader list. And interestingly, just a few minutes ago at the time of our recording, we found out that he was actually named ECAC Goalie of the Week. Now, regarding Players of the Week, Sean, you had a very interesting take on the players, like not goalies, but players that were named Players of the Week by the ECAC.
Correct. I don't usually do these editorials often, Alex. You're right. And, you know, Player of the Week for the ECAC was Ian Carpentier on Yale. Now, I can't take away the fact that he has had a great weekend. He had a fantastic weekend. Two goals against RPI, and then the next day, two goals against Union, including an overtime win, and he registered one assist. Those numbers sound phenomenal, and I have to give him credit for that. But I believe our boy Ben Berard was robbed. I have to say it. I believe our boy Ben Berard was robbed. He gave an assist, and he scored a goal in the first game against Princeton. Yeah, that was a defeat. But hey, he already registered those two things. And on top of that, he has
two goals,
a stellar game against
Quinnipiac. Two power play goals.
Exactly. Yeah. Two stellar goals, a stellar game overall against Quinnipiac, the number one team in the nation, not just the ECAC, the nation.
Yeah. And it's not even like, oh, he scored a goal. No. These are like highlight reel snipes. These are not something like this is something that the NHL would post with a funky caption saying, look what's happening in college hockey right now. And you just have Ben Berard scoring the goal. Like that's honestly, that would be it's a shame.
Yeah, it's Hollywood stuff, his goals, let alone the way he played against Quinnipiac. Hollywood stuff. He was fantastic. And I'm not here to take away anything from Carpentier on Yale. I'm not taking anything away from him. He had a great weekend.
Yeah.
Berard was just stellar, man. And you know, stats don't always speak the full game. That's sometimes a lesson in sports. Stats don't really speak the entirety of the game. Ben Berard against the number one team in the nation, and he was able to find their weaknesses, including in the last 16 seconds of the game when adrenaline was at an all-time peak.
No, 100%. And I just realized that we forgot to mention this, but you remember that Brown game that got canceled because of COVID?
Yes.
It turns out that they're actually, for the first time in, God, I don't even know how long, Cornell men's hockey is actually going to play on a Tuesday. Tuesday, February 1st at 3 p.m. So I guess it's part of this week. I mean, we could also consider it part of next week, but like, February 1st at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, they have rescheduled the Brown game that was originally postponed because the entirety of the Brown hockey squad was in quarantine. And so we will face off against Brown after this exciting weekend of hockey with Dartmouth and Harvard. So just something to put there. Oh, and it's going to be in Providence. Don't get your hopes up. No, no, they're not coming to Line a Rink on a Tuesday at 3 p.m. No, that's not the case. So nobody's skipping class for that. Although if you want to drive to Providence and make the hike, you won't, like, you won't hear any dissent from me. I love doing that. But also, yeah.
3 p.m.? No.
Yes, 3 p.m. Yeah, in the afternoon. It reminds me of the basketball games. You know, all the Cornell basketball games are at very weird times. It's surprising, but like the Cornell hockey, that's almost unheard of. Yeah. I you know, and I'm surprised, but you know, hopefully it'll be a good game. And with that, before we get too far off track, thank you for tuning into this episode of the Big Red Hockey Cast for and from the Line of Faithful. Again, this has been a Big Red Sports Network production. BRSN is a student-run organization dedicated to promoting the voices of Cornell student athletes. Make sure to check out to check us out at Cornell BRSN on Instagram. Again, that's at Cornell BRSN, and then at www.cornellbrsn.com. And of course, shout out to our awesome producer, Michael Farku, Mike Zeitz, and Jay Klein. And we'd also like to thank Ben Rudoy, John Ashbrook, and Alex Whitehead, our latest members to the team. You know, we really couldn't do this without you. So thank you guys very much. And we will all see you next week, of course.